Today is March 4th, 2015. This is the third interview with Phil Pelletier. Did I say that right?
Just a Pelletier. Just
Pelletier. I think I hit it right the first time, then I think I missed it.
Well, the French is Pelletier. And if we go back far enough, there's a French aspect.
This interview is being done at Steenbach Memorial Library. My name is Troy Reeves with the UW-Madison Oral History Program. So, Phil, even though you just spoke a little bit there, could you say your name and spell your last name?
Phil Pelletier. It's P-E-L-L-I-T-T-E-R-I.
Great. So, we have a few more questions here. I don't know if we'll get through all of them this time, but we'll see where we go. Last time, we talked a little bit about your service to academic staff. I want to start this time by talking about university service sort of writ large. And I noticed in your CV that you had some committee work both with CALS and Extension. So the first question is, why be involved in those type of committees?
Well, I mean, some of it I think is just being a good citizen. I think it's part of your responsibility to kind of be involved with these things. And I mean, there is some rewards out of it in the sense that one tends to both get to meet other people, but you get to get other perspectives. I mean, we're kind of focused, especially in CALS here, within departments. The one thing when you have an Extension appointment, you basically have two sets of bosses, so there's kind of two realities you have to work with. But again, I did find things to be very rewarding. It helped my perspective on things to kind of see kind of the bigger picture of what was going on, and so that part of it. And then, you know, some of the committees, I was involved both with the Distinguished Prefix Committee, and that was a little bit by default because my Distinguished Prefix came to me because of the Hayes Hills lawsuit from way back when. But and then quite a bit involved with awards, with the Academic Staff Excellence Awards early on and like. And those are both things I very much felt strongly about, of giving academic staff recognition. And, of course, I think getting the information out to people in general of what kind of diverse things we do here at the institution. The Distinguished Prefix is, basically one way of acknowledging people's careers. And again, the thing that was absolutely amazing with sitting on that committee is the kind of things people were doing. Famous physicists and people. We had a lot of people come through the medical school. I think part of the reason why we saw less of it is there's some salary components and other things that have to be written off administratively, and in this day and age, people don't like to make those long-term commitments. But again, we tried to promote that as best we could.
You said Extension having two different bosses. Does that mean you have an Extension boss and a CALS boss? Is that it?
Yeah, basically, the way things came. Shortly before I started, there was a little bit more tie-in rather than the separate Extension that kind of evolved. And so it was kind of interesting because at times there were different thoughts and directions. And as I said, you kind of had to make a decision what seemed to make the most sense with it. I wouldn't say there's conflict there. It's just kind of an odd system when you see how it's set up. You'd think it would be more under a single person in charge and filter down from there rather than, as I said, the way it's kind of set up now where there are two separate institutions and one part owns part of your body and one part owns the other.
We talked a little bit during one of the sessions about guest lecturing and then the work you did at the short course. But specifically for guest lectures or if you did workshops, did you eventually have, what I call a canned presentation?
Well, there were some things that I did on a very regular basis. I got involved with the Master Gardener training when it first started in the state back in the early 90s. And so it turned out that I would give probably 10 to 15 master gardener trainings of one sort or another on an annual basis. Back in the day of 35 millimeter slides, unfortunately, I was never disciplined enough to keep my talks together because I was always robbing slides for the next talk. But as things evolved, we often would do a 3-hour training, and I pretty much had that down to a 1-hour lecture on standard insects. We had done some video work up at Eagle Heights that I could use also for trying to get some teaching involved. And then there was always kind of a yearly update, what was going on, that would be of interest to people. So those were pretty much canned. But so often the requests that came into me were so different. So I probably averaged between my extension commitments off campus and on campus, probably 60 to 70 lectures at least. And as I said, it was diverse enough, but I had to kind of change it and interchange things. So, but that was fine. I mean, that keeps it fun. I mean, just to go over the same kind of material all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I'm still involved with the School of Public Health and whatnot, so I still get some lectures in, so that kind of keeps me up to date on some of this stuff.
Do you, for public health, do you still give lectures on, or I guess I should just ask what sort of lectures you still give for
public health? Well, I've been involved, in fact, this was an interesting one, because back when I was an undergrad, I took this course. It was a course in environmental toxicology. And it is now, the name has changed, but it's basically an introduction, in my case, to insecticides and their modes of action and some of the public health concerns. And things have changed dramatically, I mean, from what we used to use to where we're going now. And just trying to get people some idea. I insecticides or pesticides in general, I think, if you don't have a chemistry background or biology background, are very confusing, very scary, and just trying to put things in perspective, because unfortunately, if you rely on the common media and press, they just don't go into the detail enough to give you the kind of information you need to make good decisions. And I always find it interesting, you know, everybody assumes that organic is safe, and when you get into the individual chemistries, they're not. I mean, Each chemical has its own issues that you have to deal with, and that's, I think, a much better way to look at this than putting things into organic and not, as an example.
And so, are you giving a specific lecture for this class? Is that how that works, or do you?
Yeah, I've been giving two lectures in that course for years, as I said, basically as an introduction into how, in particularly insecticides work. You know, that's what gets so difficult when you talk pesticides in general. Then you've got, you know, herbicides and fungicides, which have different modes of action. And so it gets to be complicated enough, it's hard to give. So I try to focus at least on the stuff that I feel both more comfortable with. And in general, most of the insecticides have quite a bit more biological activity in mammals. I mean, that's what they're intended for. So, as I said, trying to get people to understand how they work. And again, kind of see the direction where people are looking now is for alternative ways of killing insects that have less impacts on non-targets in particular.
So your CV says that you're a member of the Entomological Society. I mean, it's sort of obvious why you're, or at least I would assume it's obvious why you're a member, but...
Well,
so what's your role? What was your role over time in that?
Well, the Wisconsin Entomological Society is a very interesting group. It's made up, at least half the people are not degreed entomologists. You know, and one of the interesting things about entomology is one can become an expert in a given area of insects as an amateur. In fact, this is kind of the history of entomology. I mean, the first entomologists were physicians who happened to have interest in the natural world and the like. And so it was fun interacting with people who have a real passion for insects and, again, an expertise. And so I'll tell you that some of my favorite go-to people are technically amateurs. If I have a moth that needs identification, there's a gentleman by the name of Les Fergie who, again, has been a moth collector since he was young, and he is the best person I know in the Midwest to get through. So it was always fun working with that group, and it's interesting that within the department, probably only a handful of us were members of the Wisconsin Entomological Society. Now, the National Entomological Society of America is our professional association, and you know, most of us had interactions with that and involved. But this is more of a local group, and as I said, to see the kind of spin-offs and the like, and the kind of projects these people are involved with, even to this day, in fact, even probably more so, you know, kind of citizen scientist type things. Mm-hmm. But I'm constantly running into people there. Just recently, I was lecturing in Eau Claire, and when the gentleman came up, he's a retired engineer, and now he honestly is a bee expert. And so, as his hobby, he's doing all kinds of classification and documentation of solitary bee activity in the state. And you know, there's so many areas in entomology we do not have good records for in the state. There's so many insects and so few entomologists that, so as I said, he's building up the databases on a national basis, and he's, quote, technically an amateur. So as I said, it's a fun group to work with. And
It seems like it would behoove you in your role when you were here on campus to you have to get out of academia, or you have people coming in who are not in academia. So it sounds like being a part of that society, you know, if you didn't do it on purpose, was a happy accident.
Yeah, although, as I said, you know, when I go back to my original being involved with it as a student here, you know, it just was interesting. And again, one of the people that was one of the founding members was a lawyer in Madison. And it turned out, you find out very quickly, that he's an expert in hawk moths worldwide. You know, so as I said, I just kind of opening my whole eyes to this whole aspect of all these very neat people who, if you weren't running in that circle, you probably wouldn't have contact with them. Mm-hmm. So they said that part has been a lot of fun.
So late in your career, we talked last time about the Academic Staff Award, the Heidemann Award. Later in your career, you got some awards as well. And I'm wondering if any of the awards you got in the recent past stand out as much as that Heidemann Award does.
Well, you know, many of those awards were from various groups in the state, Wisconsin Landscape Federation and Wisconsin Pest Control. And what was rewarding is those are people I had worked with along. And you know, in some sense, I knew it was kind of end of career, and it was kind of a thank you from them for the years of working with them. And I said I very much enjoyed working with a lot of those associations, so it was really rewarding to me to know that they valued our interactions and the like. And so that part is, as I said, I guess the awards were not needed, but it was very nice that they acknowledged, as I said, our longstanding relationships. And again, with running the lab, that was the one nice thing, as I got to work with so many different groups. You know, and it kind of ebbed and flowed depending on what the needs were in the department. So towards the end, you know, the medical and structural entomology groups and what we call ornamental entomology, kind of the landscape type of issues, that one is one that kind of ebbed and flowed depending on what other expertise we had in the department. You know, I often felt it was good for me to kind of fill the holes for as long as I could. But the one thing about a position like mine that you have to look into is, although you can do the extension work and the like, in order to really have a good active program, you need an active research component. And that's something that my position was not expected to do. And so we kind of, you know, I said, it's fine, I can cover this area for a while, but if we really want to continue, this is a high priority, we need somebody here, again, doing the kind of research and gaining information that we could use then to kind of carry things forward, mm-hmm. rather than just kind of holding the ship in one spot. So,
yeah, you just mentioned the lab and understanding that there is no such thing as a typical day. I'm going to ask it anyway. What sort of things might happen in a typical day at the lab?
Well, definitely the busy season is when the insects were the most active. And so if you talk from anywhere about the 15th of May well into the end of September, early on, it was all telephones and specimens being mailed in. But then a certain percentage of were just face-to-face contacts, people who would come on campus with questions or particular insects and the like. And so there was always that. So you couldn't really plan for those kind of things other than understanding that that's what you're doing day by day is what came in. Of course, that eventually got changed to a lot more emails and somewhat less phone calls. In fact, it was really quite interesting to watch as I was kind of compiling the data over the years that my phone log probably went down by about 40% towards the end of my career versus what it was early on. But then, of course, as far as number of contacts, it really almost tripled because I could handle so many more things on email and the like. And that was fun because, you had general ideas of what you might expect to be active at certain times of the year. But there'd always be new things coming in. And that's basically, as I said, what we tried to do. We tried to set it up so that we could do trainings and the like, that the county extension people, we could teach them what a particular insect was so they could take on the responsibility. If those came into the local county office, they could take it, and we didn't have to deal with these things. So we were there more to take the ones that they couldn't cover. And again, these odd curiosities. So it did come and evolve to the point that we did an awful lot of screening. And that's where a good percentage of the state records that came in were basically samples that came in the lab that we could figure out this is something new, and then, you know, if it was something important, contact the people that needed to be contacted. But as I said, so I really did enjoy that aspect of it. It's kind of every day was kind of a new slate. In the off season, if there is an off season, because you still definitely get specimens, but it's not as much the overload, that's basically when I'd go out and do a lot more of the workshops and training. And so really the busiest time with both on-campus commitments and off-campus commitments is the 1st of January till about the 1st of April for most extension people. And as I often would tease, it came to the point that I was so tired of lecturing by the 1st of April, I was ready to sit back and just answer the phone and do those things. And when it came to by the 1st of September, I was tired enough of talking on the phone, I was ready to go out and lecture again. So it really was a nice balance. Mm-hmm. So
how long was it where it was primarily just you at the lab? I mean, I guess the question is, eventually did there start to become additional help?
No. Okay. I mean, at times I would have graduate students that had an interest to see what kind of things were going on. And so they would volunteer. That normally you looked at more as a teaching and training opportunity because it did not save me time. It cost me time most of the time. So often students don't get a lot of exposure to extension and what extension is about. So I always thought it was a good experience for them to kind of see the kind of questions and inquiries that come in and in dealing with the general public. You know, the lab was originally mirrored after a similar lab in plant pathology. Their lab has grown with staff. Part of it is, again, it's the effort in the kind of science one has to do for the diagnosis is somewhat more involved. They often have to plate things and, you know, do some. Whereas most of the time with the insects, it's, you know, pretty straightforward. And if you don't know where it is, again, you know who you need to contact to get some professional help. So I just felt pretty comfortable of you know, taking care of things myself. And as I said, other than looking at potential training opportunities with students, we never did. So I would tease, on a good day, I'm the director. On a bad day, I just work there. So.
So you talked about technology in terms of the email, mm-hmm. you know, making your phone log go down, but making contacts go up. I want to talk a little bit about technology, and I'll maybe just ask it in these sort of general ways. So how did technology benefit you and, you know, by extension, the lab?
Yeah. Well, to me, the greatest invention in the world was the digital camera. And it turned out that eventually, as I, and in fact, even this year talking to PJ, it evolved to the point that 60% of the specimens we processed were digital images, rather than, again, people sending things in. And so you get a more diverse group. Sometimes when things were what you might consider curiosities, people would not be willing to package it and send it in the mail, but to just email you a picture. It also made interactions really more efficient from my standpoint because, we had a number of lab notes and other extension type information we could put together. So if somebody sent me a picture of a carpenter ant, rather than having a 15-minute conversation on the phone about the various aspects of its biology and concerns and ways to control it, I could just, email this 6-page PDF of information with pictures and the like. And so, as I said, from my perspective, it made it so much more efficient with dealing with these things. The other side of it is that if indeed we had something new, you could get a nice information piece together in a couple days and have it available. Whereas, back when I had first started, to get an extension publication often was a process that took 18 months minimum to go through all the procedures and processes. And, we had a system where they had to be ranked and the like. And so that part helped immensely. The other side, PowerPoint was just from the extension side an absolutely amazing thing to work with because, again, to have all the slides available that you need. And I did have colleagues that were disciplined enough that would have certain talks always, but I never could work from that standpoint. I don't have enough room for all the carousels, among other things. So the combination of how easy it was to make text slides, because that often said at one time we used to have to type these things out, take a picture of it, send it to a photo lab, and take 3 or 4 days to get back the process. And now you could make your own slides. And again, with the digital camera, you could often take pictures of things and get exactly the image that you wanted versus how difficult that was in the past. So, I basically had a system set up that I can put a digital camera on my microscope and take pictures very close in through the lenses. So it's just amazing. And I still sit back and look at many of the images that I came up with that I said were just incredibly valuable to me. And so those two things were great. And then eventually we moved on to doing some web-based stuff with the lab and the amount of traffic that we would get. Originally, and then the computer people would help us sort this out of how to separate hits versus individuals and the like. But, when we started getting 250,000 hits plus a year off the Insect ID site, I mean, that was very rewarding that the time you put into setting this up is that, again, people were getting information and that was my one point to the department that whoever succeeds me has to have some better internet skills and web design skills than I did. So, because this is really, I think, where the continued growth will be. Although it's a little bit of a two-edged sword, because the more people find you're there, the more people that come. And again, the original premise of the lab wasn't so much that we'd handle everything and anything. It was we would try to have the local extension offices be the first focal point and do the screening and then go from there. It's interesting that University of Minnesota, I have colleagues up there, and they had taken a very different philosophy on how to run labs. And at one time, they used to advertise in the local paper about their diagnostic lab. Now, 60% of the people in Minnesota are within a toll-free calling distance of Minneapolis. And so it's a very centered area. Wisconsin's much more broad spectrum. Back in the day, it used to cost you a little bit of money to make a long-distance phone call. That would slow people up in making the interactions and the like, or the contacts. Always felt that we were more than happy to deal with general questions in public. What we would prefer, as I said, that things come through other ways. And in other commodity groups, we would try to train the agronomist to be able to sort through things. And as I said, if there was something different, they would send it to us. So that was kind of the basic philosophy for most of the groups we worked with is to try to you know, they talk about train the trainers, but you're basically going out there and training other people that are can have much more impact in the like, just with this kind of multiplier effect you get from working with people and having them learn what some of this stuff is, and rather than always everything has to come back to campus here.
Mm-hmm. What part of the website was getting, did you say 250,000?
Oh, yeah. So we did an insect ID section. And basically the strength was more for insects indoors, because those were the kind of common questions. We built up insects on plants, especially ornamental plants. The one thing that was a little bit daunting is with the sheer number of insects. I mean, there's, when you think about it, you'd think an insect ID section could handle everything, and we knew that was not possible, you know, with 25,000 plus species of insects. So that wasn't the intent. It was really the more common pests that one would experience. And so between that and for a number of years, I ran kind of a blog-like section that they would help me do with it. Again, interesting things that would come in the lab, whether things that were expected, you know, it's the 1st of May, these are the insects that would be out there, or again, really unique things. And so that kind of was built as a database that people could kind of go back into. And so you'd again, use it in your trainings and say that, you know, if you go back into what we've been putting on for the last 5 or 6 years in the first part of May, it's going to give you a general idea of what kind of expectations, what's going to be active at this time of the year and the like. And so that also was tied in, because we'd often use pieces that we did on that blog to the insect ID section as a reference. So you get the ID, and then we'll transfer you to this piece where there's a little bit more information.
So the flip side to technology, if there is one, and so the question is, you know, over the 36 years, was there pieces of technology that actually didn't aid what you were trying to do?
No, I guess I would say, you know, there were some directions and things that we looked at times that never really quite came to fruition. You know, I remember I was on a committee where we were looking at kiosks that we could put into shopping malls and garden stores and other places as a way of answering some of these questions. And, you know, it was a very interesting idea, but both the resources needed, and we were already a couple years behind, you know, in this. And so it was kind of an interesting new technology. But as it evolved, as I said, we really didn't get that involved, and probably for the better, because I think it would have been a lot of energy and whatnot. And I'm not so sure we would have thought in the end that it was worth that investment. Mm-hmm. And the like. As I said, you always knew that when you did something public, it would maybe generate more work, but that's okay. I mean, I really didn't find that to be too overbearing.
So no examples you can think of anyway of, like you say the kiosk was a technological road not taken that turned out to be a good idea.
Right.
Any examples
right.
of maybe a technological road taken that in hindsight probably wasn't the best choice?
Well, one that I was somewhat involved with, and again, it's along a similar mode, we were looking into doing more stuff by satellite, you know, educational programs. And, you know, that really looked for time commitments, seemed a much more efficient way to do things. But the problem when at least the direction we started is we tried to get satellite dishes in every one of the county offices, which was good. But this is just about the time that cable and satellite TV was becoming available. And the problem was, is people all of a sudden were going, instead of 5 potential channels, they had 300 channels that they could get at their own home. And what we were talking about at that time is the satellite dishes were only at the extension office. So we were trying to pull people in from their own homes into the offices for educational programming. And to be honest, we didn't have the resources to put on the kind of production that really warrants being, you know, we used to talk about talking heads. you know, just to have somebody speaking there, this technology really is not very useful. And so, as I said, I it was interesting to watch, but again, I think we were a little bit behind the times. And then to seeing the kind of competition you'd have when you have 200 possibilities to run an educational channel, and especially in agriculture or horticulture, because those are the two areas we were working most extensively with in here. But, you know, again, it was worth a try. And there was other spinoffs that we got from that. I was involved with the Wisconsin Gardener Show with public television. And, you know, much like my interactions with public radio, is I was just amazed for the small investment of time, the people that would pick up on those things. And, you know, of course, now it's evolved to the point that any one of those pieces that we did are now available as downloads. And so we've got all this set good stuff that you can use in other avenues and other teaching situations. So,
So I guess I think I only have a couple more things. One is this specific question about a specific day, which was 9/11. So I'm wondering if you have memories of that day.
I was in the lab, and as things unfolded in the morning and it started to become very apparent that there was something major going on, I had a television that I used with a VCR for teaching short course, and we brought the television into the main entomology conference room and turned it on. And, you know, everybody was just stunned. And as I said, trying to unfold, you know, when there was at least two plane crashes and then they were talking about other planes, you know, just wondering where this was all going. So I very clearly remember. I mean, those kind of experiences, you know, much as a child, I can remember the day Kennedy was shot. I mean, and I was like in third grade at the time. Mm-hmm. So as I said, it's just etched in one's memory. And then for a few days until things got sorted out and more information, as I said, it was just, you had a hard time pulling away from watching the TV and whatnot and trying to get a better understanding of what was going on. So,
do you recall any short or long-term effect on campus?
Not really. I mean, other than, again, just trying to understand the complicated ways of the world, you know, and just kind of the hard to imagine, as I said, how people can get involved in that much destruction and that much impact going on. So I, you know, it was more, the people in New York, I'm sure, have a much more different perspective on this than somebody that's so distant away. Mm-hmm. And you know, I didn't lose anybody that I knew or whatnot, but still just to hear the stories and the tragedies that were involved.
So why retire when you did, which I basically last year, this month, right?
Right.
So it's been a year.
I always loved what I did. I mean, there was a lot of personal satisfaction in dealing with people and giving information and in many cases, hopefully saving them money or taking away some of their fears about what the potential insects they were dealing with. And as I said, there was always something new, something exciting. But the one thing that I started to realize is that, you know, especially with the off-campus commitments, and the time involved. So a lot of the extension commitments in the winter and early spring are weekends and evenings and the like. And so after getting home at midnight a couple times in a week and still having to teach the next day and whatnot, it just gets very wearing. And to the point that I almost dreaded, even though I once you got there, you love doing things. And it just got to the point. So I, you know, if it was just a case of sitting in the lab and doing the day-to-day responsibilities, I think that would I probably would have stayed longer. But the other responsibilities associated with the position just got to the point that, as I said, it got too wearing on me. And the other side is, you know, I'm hopefully young enough and in good enough shape I can do some of the things I want to do. I do have plenty of hobbies to keep me amused, and so that works well. And so it just seemed to be a good opportune time, and definitely have no regrets in making that decision. But and very excited about the person who has since gotten the position is going to carry it forward and do a great job with it. So that's always rewarding to see that things will continue.
Mm-hmm. How have you, or have you, kept connected to campus over this last year?
I still have an office space on campus, and so I do come in fact, a little bit more this winter, because I'm in the process of trying to write a book, and so there's a lot of material that I need to reference, both in the museum and again, some other things, and we do have, you know, seminars in the department that I have an interest in, and so I'll come in to see those. As I said, I'm still doing some teaching on campus, and so that does bring me in. You know, it's interesting that the people that I was hired with and whatnot, there's almost been a total turnover. There's only two or three people in the department who were part of the staff and faculty when I was there, and they will be retiring in the next couple of years. And that was an interesting perspective, is again, my other colleagues, you know, the one thing with an extension appointment, you work a lot with other departments because we often go out and team teach. And as I said, so kind of my whole cohort has kind of transitioned over. And so that part, and even though I enjoy the new people and they've got some great people, it said it just kind of felt that it's time.
The last question is one of legacy. What, if anything, do you think you'll be remembered for, either both on campus or in the larger community?
You know, it's interesting. It was often said, and I often teased when I was introduced in things about how I made insects interesting. And I always found that the other side is I thought I had a very easy topic to deal with, you know, and both with some enthusiasm. But I mean, by a lot, as a scientist, I mean, it's just absolutely fascinating and humbling of what kind of things insects are involved with. And again, we've never made an insect extinct with all our fancy chemicals and the like. And so, as I said, I just found it had more to do with the subject and less to do with me, as far as I was concerned. For the lab to kind of evolve out of that very short-term 3-month appointment to make it valuable enough to continue to fund it and the like, as I said, I very gratified that it's went that direction. The media stuff, you know, I said I got an awful lot of mileage out of the media work that I did. I found that, again, very rewarding, a great way to educate people on what was going on. I'm amazed at times how much recognition that I got from that. You know, the bug guy from Madison, and it was always interesting to me because, again, being kind of a generalist and the like, you know, there are much better scientists in our department than I ever was. And they don't get the recognition at the same level. As I said, I think it's the circles we would run in. I never found that very, again, found it a little bit surprising that people, in fact, I was even teased a number of times and teased by the chair of the department that when they would go out in public, they would think, people would think that I was the chair of the department because I had the most public image of the department. But yet again, in perspective to me, I was just kind of, the first contact. And again, if people needed more expertise and the like, then hopefully I knew what colleagues and whatnot to draw in. So as I said, I definitely got a lot of recognition out of it. I found it a very useful use of my time. But again, I think from the general public's perspective, they don't maybe understand the whole mission, the whole what's involved with the department and responsibilities and those kinds of things. So,
anything else you want to add?
No, without getting into all the crazy insects we dealt with, but that's something I can deal with in my book. So.
which I think I and others will look forward to seeing when it comes out. So, Phil, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it. So this concludes the oral history with Phil. And you say your last name because I'm going to butcher it.
Pelletieri.
Pelletieri. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.